When I was an Army chaplain, my soldiers asked me all kinds of questions about God, life, relationships, the Bible, and I answered them as best I could. They also called me Padre. Welcome to the Dear Padre podcast. I'm glad you're here today. We're going to talk about the Ten Commandments, and I didn't go into a lot of detail about how they are understood in a contemporary American life. Although on Tuesday morning, I ran with the Morning Joes, and I ran by the marble Ten Commandments at the Texas State Capitol, carved in stone there. So surprisingly timely discussion about how they fit into human life. And if we could talk more about that in the future, I think it is a subject that maybe people are interested in. If you are, let me know and we'll go further. Bye. A reading from Exodus chapter 20. Then God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You must have no other gods before me. Do not make an idol for yourself, no form whatsoever, of anything in the sky above, or on the earth below, or in the waters under the earth. Do not bow down to them or worship them, because I, the Lord your God, am a passionate God. I punish children for their parents' sins, even to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. But I am loyal and gracious to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. Do not use the Lord your God's name as if it were of no significance. The Lord won't forgive anyone who uses his name that way. Remember the Sabbath day and treat it as holy. 6 days you may work and do all your tasks, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. Do not do any work on it, not you, your sons or daughters, your male or female servants, your animals, or the immigrant who is living with you. Because the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and everything that is in them in 6 days, but rested on the seventh day, that is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother so that your life will be long in the fertile land that the Lord your God is giving you. Do not kill. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not testify falsely against your neighbor. Do not desire and try to take your neighbor's house. Do not desire and try to take your neighbor's wife, male or female servant, ox, donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. When all the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the horn and the mountain smoking, the people shook with fear and stood at a distance. They said to Moses, "You speak to us and we'll listen, but don't let God speak to us or we'll die." Moses said to the people, "Don't be afraid, because God has come only to test you and to make sure you are always in awe of God so that you don't sin." The people stood at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness in which God was present. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The Ten Commandments are in two places in the Bible, Deuteronomy and Exodus 20. In Exodus 20, we get the first account of the Ten Commandments right from Mount Sinai. Later, they're repeated in Deuteronomy, almost word for word, with a few differences. Some of the differences are on the Sabbath day text. The reason for it is the creation of the world in Deuteronomy, and the instruction is here, the creation of the world. God rested on the seventh day, so you should rest. I think that's the one little difference between the two. But they're the same list of 10 commandments that are given. It'd be fun to do a party game and, you know, tell one thing about yourself. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite food? What's your favorite commandment? Anyone? Favorite commandment? That's a good one. Is that one of them? Yeah. I think it's, and you I have the text in front of me, but there's nothing about love there. Isn't it that's how we understand it though, isn't it? I didn't mean to call you out. I'm sorry. But
isn't it honor or whatever?
Yeah.
Same thing.
You shall have no other gods before me. And
Jesus made it into love
and yeah. Exactly. And I shouldn't have asked that question. I was more of a
important one because that's where it starts, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it starts with love and that was always the place of the commandments in the life of the people. C.S. Lewis was married to a woman named Joy Davidman. You might have seen that in the movie Shadowlands. Both Shadowlands are pretty good. There's two versions of it. The more famous one is Anthony Hopkins, which had a lot of quotes from C.S. Lewis that he never said, but he might have said them that way, hard to say. But in that, Joy Davidman, his wife, who dies in that movie, tragically of cancer, wrote a book on the Ten Commandments, a commentary on the Ten Commandments. That's pretty good. Fire on the Mountain. I forget the title of it now. Or maybe it's just the Ten Commandments. I can't remember. But in that book, she argues that you wouldn't have to make these Ten Commandments today. People are so boring today. You know, the people of God in the wilderness were up to all sorts of things because they were alive, they were living. And God had to say, okay, here's some things you can't do anymore. That's why they're couched in the negative. It is assuming that the people are doing all these things. So he's telling them, don't do them anymore. It's kind of the opposite of how we think of them often as things we learn as children to learn not to do. Whereas she was coming at it from the grown-ups who originally received this law. They were grown-ups there in the wilderness. This was to be taught to the children, of course, but they're getting it for the first time. And I'm sure some of them were a little surprised. I guess I won't be doing that anymore. The Ten Commandments still are in effect. They have never been done away with, according to Jesus anyway. He never rescinded the Ten Commandments. He fulfilled the Ten Commandments in his own teaching and life. Every single one of these commandments was repeated by him with, or at least commented on by him in the Sermon on the Mount, another mountain, Mount Sinai, the mountain of the Sermon on the Mount, except for the Sabbath one. That's always been the tricky one that people have tried to figure out. Where did Jesus talk about the Sabbath and how that commandment is being fulfilled? And Christians really do disagree for 2,000 years on the Christian belief in the Sabbath. We're pretty clear about the other ones, but not that one. Part of that is that the other ones are a little more straightforward. The Sabbath one is very straightforward, very clear. You're not supposed to do any work, and nobody that you employ is to do any work. None of your animals should do any work. Even the immigrants that live among you shouldn't be doing any work. Nobody should be doing any work on Saturday. The word Sabbath just means Saturday, the seventh day of the week. In our calendar today, we have kind of reversed the calendar. For most people in America that work Monday, start their work week on Monday, we have Sunday as sort of the rest day before that happens. And that even though it's the first day of the week, it really becomes the last day of the weekend. And I don't know if there's much we can do about that. But as far as I know, Sunday is not the Sabbath. in accordance with this and pretty much everything Jesus taught, and even the apostles, we don't have a lot of them commenting that you're not supposed to work on the first day of the week, on Sunday. You're supposed to worship on Sunday because it's Jesus' resurrection day, a celebration of the resurrection at some time that you can. And thankfully, we live in a country where many people's work schedules allow them to be free enough on Sunday to attend some sort of worship service that is available. But this is still a tricky one. Our prayer book kind of says both. It says Sunday is the Sabbath a little bit, and it also says Saturday is the Sabbath. So I think as Christians today, you get to pick and choose on this one. But the overwhelming teaching of the Sabbath is that we rest in Jesus. That Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." That is the real Christian teaching of the Sabbath that we're supposed to follow. To rest in Jesus, knowing that Christians would not always have control of their calendars. Knowing that we would live in places like America where Saturday is not a day of rest for a lot of people. It is a day of catching up. It is a day of working and getting ready for the work week. And so given that, we must rest in Jesus. The other commandments are still in effect. They've never been done away with. But we read them through the eyes of Jesus. In our Alpha course this week, next week, on Wednesday, we will explore the teachings of Jesus and how he, how we read the Bible through his eyes, and how he is the interpretive key for all the books of the Bible, many of which are written about him, even before he was born. His teachings on all these commandments are an attempt to get to the spirit of the law. The letter killeth, but the spirit giveth life. This is how we interpret these laws. There's a great This American Life last week or the week before about a guy who, because he was working and living in San Francisco that has really strict parking laws, he had to move his car every 2 hours in this one neighborhood where he was staying. Every 2 hours, morning, noon, and night, middle of the night, he had to move his car. And he would move it just around the block, like not very far. And one day he got a ticket. So he went to court and he said, "You know, they said you didn't move your car." He said, "Yes, I did." They said, "Well, you only moved it about, how far did you move your car?" And he says, "About 30 feet. He moved it about 30 feet. And the judge said, "Well, let's look up the statute. How far do you have to move your car for it to be considered a new parking space, a new parking experience that will now start the clock again?" The statute said it was 35 feet that he had to move his car, 35 feet. And so he appealed the second time he got a ticket to his original argument, because he said, "You know, in the history of law, it is often the spirit of the law that is more important than the letter of the law." And that is true in every law system. Every law commentator throughout history has commented on the fact that the law was never meant for you to do something awful legally. It was always meant to provide a standard for you to fulfill the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is that we can't have cars parking here 24 hours a day and not moving, because then there won't be enough parking spaces for everybody. So you have to move your car every 2 hours, which will hopefully make you move away, far away, or get rid of your car and just walk everywhere. That's the spirit of the law. So the second time he got the ticket, the judge forgave him the ticket because she realized that he was right the first time. He didn't know he was supposed to move it 30 feet, 35 feet. He moved it 30 feet and got the ticket. So the spirit of the law is something that everybody recognizes, and Jesus makes it very clear that it is the spirit of these laws that matter. You can say, "I haven't murdered anyone," but if you hate your brother in your heart, you have murdered him, Jesus says. Now, obviously, the penalty for murder is a lot worse and needs to be a lot more strict and harsh and limiting than the penalty for hating someone. But again, Jesus is not concerned about creating a political system at this point in his ministry when he comments on the Ten Commandments. What he's concerned about is people understanding the law of God that God gave on Mount Sinai, because the same God that Jesus prayed to is the God that gave the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. And we must remember that. This is not a different God, a different system. This is all one seamless garment of truth from the beginning of Genesis to the end of our Holy Scriptures. There's some that come into our practical lives, maybe more than others, in the Ten Commandments. And we could go through all of them, but which we won't today. But I think the one, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not testify falsely against your neighbor. It's clearly in a court of law, you're not supposed to do that. And the courts of law, as described two chapters ago, were a bunch of people coming up to Moses or his judges that he appointed and saying, I'm mad at this guy. I'm mad at what he did or she did. And that is the court system of that day. And we live in a similar day where in America, we are allowed to say just about anything about anybody. We really have some pretty good legal protections about slander and libel so that we can comment on other people's behavior and things and that they've done. And I think our concern in the days of the internet is that we have to, as Christians, remember that testifying falsely about our neighbor is still a thing we can violate. Do we know for sure that what we're about to talk about and write about is true, so that we are not giving false testimony? And this cuts across all political parties, all ideologies. Everyone has an equal opportunity to lie and testify falsely when information fits what we believe about something, when it isn't always true. Right now on social media, especially on Facebook, but it's happening on all the platforms, we have whole governments that are dedicated to spreading misinformation to the American public about news stories and events. We know this firsthand. There's many articles about it from our government and from security agencies, that whenever you see something that seems to really fit what you believe about politics, that may be generated by a Russian data farm and bot farm that is sending those articles out and stories and news stories and even just individuals' comments on things. You can study this yourself by just Google searching certain replies to news stories, and you'll find hundreds of the same replies by all different people replying to the same kind of thing. We live in an age of severe misinformation. When AI finally becomes good enough to get their hands right so that you can not tell if it's a human or not, we will also have a crisis of false testimony. And we will have to be very careful to not share things that really aren't true. This is probably one of the most insidious violations of these Ten Commandments. So what do you do if you break one of these? You do what everybody does. You repent and you move on. That's what you do when you break one of these Ten Commandments. We know that the spirit of the law gives life, and Jesus gives life. So none of these things are areas in which we have failed utterly or we should feel ultimate shame for. They are all just a showing of how gracious God is for us. Jesus died for the lawbreakers. He died for those who have broken this covenant with God, you and me. And so we remember that we are forgiven in Jesus Christ. So We follow Jesus in keep as he keeps the law, not with some expectation of ultimate perfection, but of expectation of thankfulness and gratefulness for him. Amen.